mente, este mundo misterioso donde se cultivan la imaginación, la percepción, la conciencia y la memoria. Donde se construyen los sueños, donde creamos nuestra realidad. Por muchos años el ser humano ha tratado de entenderla, de descifrarla. Y hemos descubierto que posee un enorme poder, tanto para destruir como para crear. En este podcast encontrarás diferentes métodos, ideologías, entrevistas, historias y meditaciones guiadas, todo relacionado al entrenamiento de la mente, para convertirte en el creador consciente de cada segundo de tu existencia. Yo soy Pau Arroyo y esto es Mind Boss. Me da un gusto enorme que me acompañen como cada miércoles en los episodios de Mind Boss. Creo que ya todos los que han escuchado episodios pasados saben la gran obsesión que tengo con aprender sobre todo de temas relacionados al funcionamiento de nuestro cerebro, salud mental, etcétera. Como lo he mencionado anteriormente y en los primeros episodios del podcast, MindBoss nace de un parteaguas en mi vida en donde tuve la fortuna, así le llamo yo, la fortuna de experimentar con la ansiedad. Ahorita me van a entender por qué. Este episodio es mucho, muy importante para mí, porque además de ser el primer episodio que grabo en inglés, es un episodio en donde estaremos hablando con una importante neurocientífica estadounidense que ha dedicado gran parte de su vida a estudiar el funcionamiento de nuestro cerebro en relación a precisamente la ansiedad, entre otros temas, por supuesto, igualmente importantes. Les recuerdo que pueden encontrar este episodio en nuestra cuenta de YouTube con subtítulos en español. Que lo disfruten mucho. Welcome back. Well, today is a very special day for Mind Boss because I finally managed to bring to the podcast a great guest with whom I'll have the honor to talk about one of the most important obstacles of my life and the main reason why this podcast came into existence. My guest today is what I consider one of the most important women neuroscientists of our time because of the great contribution she has made through her research. She's an award-winning professor of neuroscience and psychology in the Center for Neuroscience at New York University, a TED speaker sharing with us the brain-changing benefits of exercise, and also the author of the amazing book titled Healthy Brain, Happy Life, which is a personal program that helps us activate our brain and do everything better. And who doesn't want to do everything better, right? Her most recent book is called The Good Anxiety, which is a guide to harnessing the power of what she calls the most misunderstood emotion, anxiety. And I have to agree, I totally agree with this one. Dr. Wendy Suzuki, doctor, welcome to MindBoss. I cannot thank you enough for kindly accepting my invitation.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. So excited to be here.
Thank you. Well, doctor, as I told you the first time I contacted you, for me, it is a great honor to have you here today because I consider of utmost importance that the contribution that you've made through years and years of work and research is known everywhere. I personally believe that in Latin America, although we have done a great job to advance in terms of mental health and the improvement of our brain in relation to the quality of our lives in the last few years, there is still a lot of work to do and a lot of information to put out there for people who are going through anxiety and depression themselves.
Yes.
And I have to tell you, I love the way you share all your work and research because I know you do it from the heart. You've shared multiple times you've been through stages of anxiety and depression yourself, right? And yes. I love you to share with us how your process was to turn anxiety into, as you call it, your superpower.
So it's been a long process. I think the first really big bout of anxiety that I went through was when I was trying to get tenure at New York University. And it's a stressful, anxiety-provoking process for anybody. And my strategy, looking back, was not optimal. I said, okay, so I'm just going to work all the time. That's just my strategy. I'm not going to move. I'm going to eat takeout. I'm going to minimize everything else. No social interaction. I'm just going to work until I get that tenure.
Wow.
And not the best strategy. I do not recommend it. And it resulted in a 25-pound weight gain. I was anxious. I was worried. I was not happy. Why am I doing this? And the first discovery was you need to do something about your anxiety. You need to help your mental health state.
Right.
And that brought me to the gym and modifying my diet as well, which over a year and a half allowed me to lose the weight. Oh, I was so much happier. It was transformative in my mood, in my energy levels. And that really changed an enormous amount for me personally in my life. I started to realize that, you know, while I loved the topic of memory, which is the topic that I got my tenure for, gosh, this exercise is really doing a lot for my brain. Wow. Isn't that interesting? And so I did something that not many people do that is, you know, full tenured professor. I decided to change my research topic. And that's not done because we spend so much time cultivating our friends and our networks and our you know, cohorts in science. You don't just go and switch. But I had to because I was I woke up thinking about, you know, look at how much exercise changed my brain. It changed my life. It changed my motivation. It changed my affect level. And it could do so much for so many people, millions of people. Think of the students it could help. Right. Think of the stressed out workers it could help. Think how it could help people aging and the protection that exercise brings for their mental health and their brain structural health. So it was kind of a no-brainer, even though it was very scary to do, anxiety provoking to do that. But I dove in and jumped into exercise, which was my first book, Healthy Brain, Happy Life. When I started to notice as I was doing these exercise studies, number one, anxiety seems to be going up. What's going on? Students have anxiety. I have anxiety, even though I got through my tenure, still feeling anxiety from my phone, from the news, from the weather reports, from all these different things. How can I harness the power of neuroscience to address anxiety? And that's where we are right now.
Well, that's awesome. I remember reading your book, The Good Anxiety, and I remember how you shared in the book that after the loss of your dad and then the loss of your brother, it took a while for the anxiety to really kick in. So what you're mentioning is I've had like different moments in my life in which I've been dealing with anxiety, right? So it took, you mentioned that, right? Like it took a while to really kick in. And then with time, little by little, you started to feel hope and optimism again. How all did this comfort that came into your life because of anxiety became major motivation for you to keep going? And there's this phrase you wrote, and I quote, "My anxiety was guiding me to engage with parts of my life that brought meaning." This truly blew my mind because it is so true. Anxiety in some ways pushes us to engage in what truly matters, right?
Right. Yeah, it does. And you know, I dedicated the book to my father and my brother because their passing in the middle of writing this book really made it what it became. Right. It wouldn't have been the same book if that didn't happen. And because exactly, thank you for identifying that phrase, that the anxiety, grief. I mean, it wasn't just anxiety. There was true grief in there. Some of the most difficult emotions I've ever experienced in my life that so many others have experienced with the loss of loved ones. I mean, that's what happens. But going through those negative emotions made me realize, you know, they are there for a reason. They're there to mark how much these people meant in my life. And it's meaningful that they are now not with us anymore. And you should be devastated and you should be feeling this grief and that it is a marking of something so important in your life that I didn't realize that I had. None of us do until we, you know, really experience this loss. So realizing that and working through, I've said that, you know, I felt like I was kind of going through a master class of the most difficult emotions that humans experience in the middle of trying to write this book. I realized that anxiety, everyday anxiety, is not the same as grief that I experienced with the passing of my father, my brother. Mm-hmm. But those uncomfortable emotions are also there to point out what values we have in our lives, what we find important. And that's where the six superpowers really came from. Before, there weren't superpowers. And partially I needed superpowers at that moment in my life to still get through. But I was driven because I realized that that was the key to the book, that these uncomfortable emotions are misunderstood. They are valuable, and they do bring us superpowers. And so that's what I tried to kind of birth from this experience.
I think you'll agree with me on this one, that in difficult times where we are dealing with great pain, like grief,
yeah,
the first thing we want to do is get rid of it, right? Like not feel it. So exactly. we tend to put ourselves in this race with time and seek for the most quick solution to this pain. And we forget to give ourselves time to process this emotion and heal. Yeah. At least this was my case. And I really wish I had read your book before, because one of the teachings that really hit me was to not just go beyond the pain, but make something meaningful out of it.
Yeah.
I think this is a really important step in the process of healing. So what steps could you share with us to go beyond the pain and transform obstacles into tools?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll start with the loss. And as I describe in the book, you know, it brought into vivid technicolor color how lucky we are to be alive, how lucky I was to be alive, how lucky I am to have the people that are still around with us. I never thought that before. It's like, I'm going to try and do my stuff when I'm alive. But it's like, oh my God, you know, it's real.
Right.
And so what does that mean? I think to give you practical examples of how it changed my life, starting with that example, is, you know, just an appreciation for my family that's there. Right. That, you know, like now I realize I could not just lose them, but of course you can lose anybody at any moment.
Right. Or anything, right? Your job.
Or anything. Right. And so to really take advantage of that. And I must say that I feel like I've really done that in a deep way. I've savored those relationships. They are stronger. They are better than deeper than they ever were. And they are, you know, something that I'm really proud of. So I translated that true change in my life from that experience to what can my everyday anxiety, and I admit, you know, I think it's annoying too. It's like, why do I have to have this?
Right.
But I remind myself, okay, what is this telling me about myself, about my history, about my values? And another example that I'll share associated with anxiety is I share that one of my oldest anxieties is social anxiety. So it's a very shy, awkward wallflower of a kid. Yeah. And I'm now I'm a teacher and a speaker. So I'm comfortable speaking, but I will tell you, I still have anxiety in like social situations, like party situations. And I've always been nervous in social kind of making new friends situations. And I know that about myself. But what I learned is that while I've always felt that way, of course, I have good friends now. And the value of that came into focus with the pandemic, of course, and not being able to see them as much. And my family, of course, but my friends, it made me realize that, you know, I will always have that social anxiety. It will always be there. It will never go away. But what it made me realize is that look at what it gives. If I'm brave enough to battle it, it could give me these friends that I now have that, you know, I miss so much and that helped me through the pandemic. And so it's, you know, it was seeing the double-edged sword. I will always have that. That's always been, it's just hard for me. It always has been, it always will be. But now I have the wisdom of seeing how much a new friendship can blossom and be meaningful in my life.
Right.
So it really does make it easier. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you can apply that in every situation where you feel discomfort or pain. Like you can go beyond that and then make it something meaningful, because you notice, you know, like what you gain out of letting go of the fear and, you know, going through the door and looking at the stuff that you can really gain from like letting go everything that's not working for you right now. So I think that's amazing. And this relates to resilience and vulnerability, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
How can vulnerability help us navigate through anxiety in a more easy way?
Yeah. You know, one of the biggest lessons that I've learned in being a speaker and conveying information is that it's very powerful and engaging to be vulnerable and share. The messages come through stronger and more meaningfully if you are vulnerable and share yourself. And that was very hard for me to do as a scientist who was taught never share anything like that.
I can imagine. Wow.
Yeah. So, but I also have this funny thing about myself that despite the fact that I was very shy and awkward and a wallflower, I also had this lifelong secret desire to be a Broadway star because used to go to all the Broadway shows with my father. Cool. And we have so many great memories of going to Broadway shows in San Francisco where I grew, and we grew up south of San Francisco. So we'd always go into the Broadway shows in San Francisco. And then my parents would come in and we saw many, many Broadway shows. I live in New York now. So I think that the secret performer in me allowed me to dare to try and make my presentations as engaging as I found watching these incredibly talented singer, dancer, actors on Broadway. And the most powerful tool that I had, because I can't sing, is vulnerability.
Okay, that's awesome. So like to let everyone else know, hey, you know what? This is me. This is what I do. This is what I feel. I think that's a superpower in some way, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Being vulnerable is something that can help us go through this, whatever situation that we're living in a difficult situation. And in that place of vulnerability, we can connect with other people a lot. Yes. And I think that's very important also, right? To surround ourselves with this, with your tribe that helps us and emotionally can, help us go through whatever difficult situation we're going through.
Absolutely.
Wendy, you share a lot about how physical activity and meditation, tea meditation specifically, are key habits in your daily routine. And as a meditation guide myself, I'm very excited to have the point of view of a neuroscientist in this matter. Mm-hmm. How can integrating these two habits, exercise and meditation, in our life can help us transform bad anxiety into good anxiety?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is a very straightforward question to answer from a scientific point of view. So I'll start with exercise because there's so much information there, both from kind of mechanistic point of view, as well as behavioral point of view. And we know that exercise has immediate long-term and long-term effects on our mood states. It is every single time you move your body, it's like you're giving your brain a bubble bath of neurochemicals, including dopamine and serotonin and noradrenaline, which is why, you know, you're not feeling good. You need a break. You go outside, take a walk. It's like, oh my gosh, I feel so much better. I wonder why. Well, I'm here to tell you why. Moving your body is releasing serotonin, dopamine, noradrenaline, growth factors, BDNF, all of that is contributing to that better mood state that you have. Now, and specifically will decrease anxiety, decrease depression levels, and increase energy levels. Now, meditation, a regular meditation practice has the same effects, particularly on anxiety and stress. It will decrease anxiety and stress levels. Does it do it in exactly the same way? We don't know quite as much detail about how it's doing it. We know from clinical studies that a range of meditation practices, from Jon Kabat-Zinn's mindful meditation practice to other forms of meditation that have been studied, can have a long-term effect on your mood levels. So you're getting a double dose, or I'm giving myself a double dose as I do my I start my day with my tea meditation, followed by a regular exercise session every single morning, 7 days a week. And it's just my kind of
routine, right?
Routine. I'm banking on, you know, my good mental health.
That's awesome. And that's awesome that you can see it, like what's really going on in the brain, right? Because yes. Most people don't understand this part. There's so much going on in our brain when we are exercising, when we are meditating, we're actually changing our brain, right?
Right.
So for me, this is very interesting because I practice meditation daily, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to exercise myself every day. And it's so true. Like sometimes I feel, I don't know, maybe sad or something. And I just walk outside and for like 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing the changes I get in my mood. Like,
yeah.
Wow, big, big, big change. And we do not really understand what it is sometimes. Yeah. So now that you're explaining, hey, this is what's happening in your brain, you can become like more, how can I say, like more excited to do exercise because you know this is helping you in many ways, right?
Yeah. And here's the other thing to motivate you. It's free.
Right.
You can go outside. It's free. You can go on YouTube and find thousands of meditations and just watch them. Just choose the one with over 1 million views. Watch it. You'll know it's going to be popular.
Right.
It's free. Try it. These are small, subtle changes and they do affect your brain. They do change your life. And it's like a gift being offered up to everybody.
Yeah, it's there for everyone. Now, you share in the book that you do specifically tea meditation. How is that? How does that work?
Yeah. So this was a form of meditation that was taught to me by a tea monk, cool. that has studied the art of tea across the world. So I was at this beautiful hotel where he was a guest and I was asked, you know, do you want to join the tea monk for some tea meditation? And I said, sure. I had no idea what it was. So me and five other guests came. He didn't say very much. We all sat in a circle. He had these beautiful handmade tea bowls. And he had a beautiful teapot with delicious tea, mm-hmm. and dark. It was fermented tea called pu'er tea. And he brewed the tea in silence. He told us, so we're going to start a silent tea meditation. So we just watched him very calmly brew the tea. He served the tea. He offered it to us. We all, you know, drank it in silence, kind of appreciating the smell, the beautiful smell of the tea, the warmth of the bowl, what it looked like, kind of our reflection in the tea bowl. And it was a pretty big bowl of tea. And so I thought, okay, I was kind of proud of myself. I finished the whole tea, really enjoying the atmosphere.
The experience, right?
The experience. Well, 8 bowls of tea later, meditation ended. I can tell you that it was easy to sit there because it was a ritual. I was swept up in this ritual. There was always something next to do. Oh, we finished the tea. So he has to brew it. He has to seep it. Then he has to serve it. Now it's our turn to drink it again. And this ritual is like, wow, I've never been able to sit in quiet contemplation meditation as easily as I did during the ritual of brewing and drinking tea. And to drive home that point, I went home and every morning since that morning, 6 years ago in August, I've done it on my own in my home and shared it with so many people. I did a virtual tea meditation every Sunday at 10 a.m. During the whole pandemic. So it's really become a part of my everyday life.
Wow, I've never heard of tea meditation before until I read your book and you shared that part. And I was like, what is that? How does that work? And I think it's very, very interesting that we can find so many different types of meditation that work for each and every one of us. Because not all of them work for everyone, right? So,
right.
Plus, you're drinking tea. So that's good for our gut and everything.
Exactly, right? Exactly.
Wendy, as I was reading your book, The Good Anxiety, I felt so connected to what you were sharing. And I remember becoming aware of the fact that when I was experiencing anxiety myself, I thought it was the worst thing that could have ever happened to me. Mm. And now after almost 5 years of that period in my life, I can truly say I see anxiety as the best thing that could have ever happened. Because Great. I know myself so much better than before. And because I discovered so many hidden superpowers I had no idea I had. And as you mentioned in the book, anxiety became the emotion that pinpointed exactly what was not working out for me at the time.
Yeah.
And that gave me a huge, huge insight into the changes I had to make to improve the quality of my life. Yeah. Yet many people get stuck in this phase and say, okay, then what's next? What do I do? How do I take action, right? So I would love for you to share with us, what were some of the tools that helped you the most in the process of overcoming anxiety in different points of your life?
Well, I feel like the big tool that I used first in that very challenging period of getting tenure at New York University was exercise. And exercise did so many different things for me. I just told you what it did for my brain. So it changed neurotransmitter levels, got my mood better. What I didn't mention is that we also know that long-term exercise, and I changed my fitness level. I went all the way. I got all those benefits, which means that I know that my prefrontal cortex was working better. It was bigger. It has more synapses now than it did while I was going through tenure. My hippocampus works better. And it really, if you look at my teaching also during this time, it's like, wow, you got a lot more creative once you started doing exercise. What happened to you there? I'm like, well, I started exercising and possibilities opened up. I told you, it's true. I've always had problems with kind of social anxiety. And part of the thing that I did to myself during tenure is I didn't have any friends. I mean, because I worked all the time and it was hard enough to make real friends. And so not that I had none, I just didn't make any new ones in this new location. And so the other thing that exercise did for me was it brought me to the gym and it got me lots of new friends. And so I was like, oh, this is fun. I see you all the time. And so it kind of makes it easier to become, you know, gym friends.
Right.
And it really made me feel strong and powerful, where I was feeling anxious and weak and
stepped on
before.
Right.
And so that is what kind of pushed me to become more creative, to say, well, look, I was able to really change my physical activity. My body's like, wow, if I could do that, I could do anything.
Right.
And that's what kind of opened up. Well, maybe you can change your research. Who cares if nobody else did it? What are you interested in, Wendy? And what are you interested in teaching? Maybe you want to teach it in a new way. Maybe you want to bring exercise into the classroom. Who cares if all your faculty friends say, well, what the heck are you doing?
Right.
That in particular, I mean, and then I wrote a whole book about it.
Right.
They've been happy life. And so it really transformed my life in so many different ways. You know, I will always be grateful. And to some extent, I think about that, you know, every morning I'm doing exercise. It's like, yeah, this got me to where I am. And it's going to keep me going towards those creative, interesting directions that I want my life to go in.
Yes, I love the way you make us feel, those who read the book and your books and follow you and see everything you share. You make it feel like the truth, because I've experienced it. Anxiety is it's not the bad guy. It's a good guy. It's the guy that's telling you, hey, you got to wake up. This is happening. Life has to change, right? So that's what I meant when I said, like, so it actually pinpointed exactly what I had to change. And I think that's what happened to you, right? Like you said, okay, I need to change this in my life. I was not exercising. I was not socializing. So I need to change exactly this. And in my case, it was, I am not paying attention to what I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. And that was a huge one for me. It was a huge, huge lesson.
Lesson, yeah.
It was a huge lesson for me, because it was like, okay, you're not paying attention to your feelings. So there's no way your body and your mind can process them without you making changes. So the anxiety is here. It's not the bad guy. It's the good guy that's coming to tell you, hey, you need to pay attention to what you're feeling.
Yeah.
Listening to yourself, feeling yourself, and, you know, making this something that can help you in the future.
I totally feel you on that one, because for me, the first indication was really not anxiety so much as I weigh 25 pounds more than I used to. That was my big, of course, anxiety underlined it, but it was like, I remember walking past this big window where you can see your whole self in profile on the way to work. It's like, who wow, where did that come from? And what I realized when I was writing Good Anxiety is that I am a bona fide anxiety denier. I did not like to admit the amount of anxiety that I felt. And this was well after all the exercise stuff. Because I like to be the energetic, happy one all the time. And so and I don't like to think about anxiety. I didn't like to think about anxiety. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I've been anxiety focused the whole time. This book really forced me to learn myself about how I deal with anxiety. And then share it. But your example and my example is so common. Who wants to think about their anxiety? Nobody. I don't want to think about it. I just want it to go away. And so it takes a little effort and education and understanding to know that actually you can learn a lot. Just look there. That's really going to teach you a lot. So stop ignoring it. Stop denying it. Look at it. Learn from it. Leverage it. Turn it into a gift. Turn it into a super.
Wow, that's beautiful. Now, I know you are, as a neuroscientist, very, very familiar with neuroplasticity. And this might be a new term to some. So if we could briefly explain what neuroplasticity is and how can we actively use it to transform our experience in relation to anxiety?
Yeah. So neuroplasticity or brain plasticity is our brain's tremendous ability to change its circuitry, to change how it is wired up in response to life's experiences. And there's two flavors. There's positive brain plasticity that can happen with things like good exercise, meditation will change your brain. Learning will change your brain. And negative brain plasticity that can come from chronic stress, chronic anxiety, or bad anxiety, as I call it in the book. And so this is the topic that I've been studying since I was a little baby neuroscientist. It was what fascinated me. It got me into memory, learning and memory as my first love in neuroscience. And part of the thing that fascinated me about exercise, another example of positive brain plasticity, is that it could actually improve my memory. Like that's even better. You know, I was busily trying to understand the mechanisms of memory, and exercise was there making my memory work better. And so that is a really important concept. And it is really the core foundation of the work that I do in all of my books, trying to bring the most informative and most research-based examples of positive brain plasticity for everybody to learn, for everybody to use, and for everybody to integrate into their lives.
That's awesome. Wendy, I always ask this final yes or no question. Do you think everything and everyone serves a purpose?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely, yes. And you may not know it, but it's there.
Right. I totally agree with that one. What purpose has anxiety served in your life?
It has opened me up to a much deeper appreciation of the power of human emotion. Because for so many of us, we just want to live in the happy zone. It's like, just stay happy. This is whatever. I'm going to ignore everything else. I'm just going to like try and focus on happy. But what my anxiety, and particularly writing this book and talking and thinking and interviewing so many people about anxiety, it's changed my whole mindset about this beautiful array of emotions that humans have, and that they're all there for a reason. And we can get as much learning and information, and in fact, joy out of our more uncomfortable emotions as we do from those happy emotions. In fact, the happy ones are even happier,
right?
Because we have the more uncomfortable ones.
Yeah. I love this phrase. You also mentioned that it changed the way you thought, like in black and white.
Yeah.
And it was, with great pain comes great wisdom.
Yes.
And I totally agree with that one, because sometimes we tend to, you know, like what we were saying before, we try to block pain away or always stay in the happy zone, like you were saying right now, and just stay there and just ignore everything else. But with pain, pain makes us go forward. Pain makes us grow and evolve. Yeah. I really feel so related right now and so connected to everything you've shared, Wendy. And I cannot thank you enough, first of all, for your time and for all the work you've done and everything you've shared with us. Thank you for being here today, really.
Thank you so much, Paulina. I really enjoyed this conversation. And thank you for having me on. And I feel like you really got the book, and that always brings me such great joy. And thank you for helping to share these messages with your followers. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Wendy. Well, to everyone out there listening to this episode, I really encourage you to read Wendy's book, especially The Good Anxiety, which is like the, I love it. Towards the third part of the book, you'll find lots of really cool and interesting introspection exercises and awesome tools to turn anxiety into your superpower. You can find out more about Wendy's work and books on her Instagram account at wendy.suzuki or on her webpage, wendysuzuki.com. Thank you for joining us on another episode of Mind Boss. See you next Wednesday.